Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer. This episode is another in our mission to inform you and those interested in becoming more resilient personally and in your communities. We are very pleased to have David Pine back on the show to update us on what is going on with the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, of which David Pine has just been elected president. David Pine currently serves as president of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, as chairman of the Utah Republican Veterans Caucus, as a West Valley Police Honorary Colonel, as editor of the Real War newsletter, and as defense and foreign policy advisor to Vivek Ramaswamy during his presidential candidacy. David previously served as National Security Policy Director for U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, as a founder of Senator Lee's Military Advisory Committee, as a vice president for the Association of the United States Army's Utah chapter, and as second vice president of the Salt Lake Task Force chapter of the Military Officers Association. He also served as vice chairman of the Utah State Legislative Compensation Commission from 2009 to 2017. What I am specifically asking of David is that he give us and the current presidential candidates the suggestions from the task force on our national grid security and resiliency. David, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio, and congratulations on your selection as president of the task force, a position I am sure you will do very well at.
Thanks so much, Preston. It's an honor to be back on your show.
It's been a while. We've had you on a couple times, but I've been otherwise involved in other things here and just haven't had time for this podcast, unfortunately, but I'm trying to get there. Can you give us and our friends listening a brief intro into the task force and its mission, and then we'll move into our main subject, which is the task force's advice to these presidential candidates?
Yeah, you bet. So the Task Force on National Security is a congressionally authorized board that was created with Dr. Peter Pry, our late courageous and visionary executive director, leading it in 2011. And he served for 11 years until his unfortunate, untimely death, 2022, and then Cindy Ayers took it over. And then, as you mentioned, I was elected to serve as the new president just about 2 weeks ago. But what the task force is focused on is defending America against existential threats, principally electromagnetic pulse attack, as well as cyber attack, and nuclear missile attack as well. And there are really a myriad of threats against U.S. homeland and against the electrical power grid in particular, that include, things in addition to what I just stated, kinetic terrorist attacks, sabotage attacks for potential PLA special forces already in the U.S. that have crossed into our southern border in huge numbers of up to 100,000 troops over the last 4 years. And there's, potential conventional EMP attack. There's, folks that could just shoot up some PPP substations and take down our grid for, up to 3 weeks that way. But what we're really trying to do is to preserve the United States of America. And we believe the United States cannot exist or endure without the continuation of our electrical power grid. So, we're trying to educate our citizens as well as U.S. policymakers to these existential threats, many of which are sadly not even really on the radar of members of Congress.
Wow. Especially with all the media attention we've had on threats to our grid, not only cyber, but the potential of conflict with these peer nations that we're seeing all the time.
Yeah, and that's the greatest threat we're facing. And it's a threat that's very much avoidable. Dr. Peter Pry and I, we collaborated on, gave me a special task to try to come up with ways to influence Russia to, break up its alliance with China, come up with ideas on how to accomplish that. And, he did some great interviews and articles before his passing from cancer. But, it's really a failure of diplomacy as well as our grand strategy, because the grand strategy we've been having is a very provocative and dangerous strategy. It's very reckless. It's a strategy of liberal hegemony, which Biden has really, really championed. And it's got us into a lot of trouble. It started an unnecessary war in Ukraine that threatens to escalate to the nuclear level with potential, nuclear strikes on Ukraine, but also on U.S. and NATO as well. And, most likely that's kind of a less likely threat. I mean, certainly non-strategic nuclear weapons use is, remains a fairly likely possibility in Ukraine or Eastern Europe. But in terms of the U.S. and strategic nuclear exchange, I think that's much more limited. It's much more likely that we'll see a massive cyber attack, such as Lieutenant General Michael Flynn is reportedly predicting behind the scenes. He hasn't come out publicly and stated that, but he's warning of, massive cyber attack by either China or Russian China. He has actually got specific as to what countries he thinks, would attack us. But he's saying that could happen as soon as next month. And one of the, I've been predicting that, due to Biden's, his statements where he said he's going to defend Taiwan militarily and go to war with China, have been very provocative, kind of abandoning our policy of strategic ambiguity in relation to Taiwan.
Right.
And That might explain a Chinese decision to engage in this type of preemptive, massive, comprehensive, nationwide cyber attack on the U.S. to take out our power, our satellites, our communications, our internet, our financial system, all of our critical infrastructure. And they have, in my assessment, they have the ability to take it down permanently using, with cyber attacks, perhaps joint cyber attacks with Russia. It wouldn't be quite as devastating as EMP, but it'd be very close. And, we just have to change our foreign policy to one of, diplomacy and negotiation of conflicts to prevent these types of existential threats from materializing. We've seen that, two world wars happened because of a failure of diplomacy, which really I think I've written about were quite avoidable.
Yes. We kind of got a taste of what a cyber attack on electrical infrastructure can look like by the Russian strike on the Ukraine here recently. That put a lot of people in the dark for a while. And I think if a nation state is going to do that against us, they're not going to do it to where we can turn things back on very easily. And we've chronicled these threats before in our shows with you and Michael Mabee and Dr. Peter Pry. It's known. And the thing is, the people that make decisions, they don't want to make decisions.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. We spent $1.5 trillion on, you know, infrastructure bills since the Biden administration came to power. And, you know, we could have spent just a small fraction of that on protecting the grid from, you know, cyber and EMP attack, as little as $50 billion for a, you know, a hard permanent fix.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I don't think that would likely be sufficient to address the threat of 466 large Chinese transformers in our grid.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of grid hardening, that's probably all it would take.
Right.
And, you know, we're talking about maybe a 3% user fee on everyone's power bill for 4 to 5 years, you know, where they pay maybe a few hundred dollars, you know, maybe a lot less than that, maybe $150 extra a year to protect us against this existential threat. So if there was an EMP attack, we could recover.
Yeah.
And currently, if there was an EMP attack, the chances of us being able to recover are next to nil, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's shift into the main topic now, but I just want to give the EMP's website. We'll give it at the end as well, but it's emptaskforce.us. You can go there and there's all kinds of resources and information that you can get there and help educate yourself and others with. Sir, can we shift to the main topic? I know you have a lot of great ideas that these leaders can implement, and we want to be the first to hear officially what the task force's position is.
Yeah, well, the task force, obviously our number one focus again is grid hardening and security from all hazards, all the hazards that I mentioned, you know, cyber, EMP, nuclear, terrorists, you know, kinetic, nuclear ground bursts and air bursts. So there's a lot of different threats that we're facing. But one threat I haven't yet mentioned is the threat from the sun, where, you know, every 150 years, there's, you know, super geomagnetic storms, G5 storms, which, you know, back in 1859, turned off the lights and even electrocuted a lot of the folks manning the telegraph system. And according to some reports, even melted some of the rail lines. So that's something that's it's not a question of when, if, but when. And so we're overdue for that occurring. And that we associate, you know, we try to point out that, you know, in terms of climate change, you know, that's really the principal threat, you know, as President, you know, we don't make endorsements as the EMP task force. We're a nonpartisan organization. But President Trump pointed out that, you know, the other threat that we face is from nuclear global warming.
Yeah.
So, you know, global warming, you know, certainly exists in nature. There's a question as to whether it's man-made or not, whether that really is a contributor. But the greatest threat from you know, from global warming would be, you know, if there was a nuclear conflict that devastated the globe and killed 1 billion people. So between that threat and the threat of you know, super geomagnetic storm that would likely be global, not just focused on the U.S. as a man-made EMP event would be with an EMP first strike by Russia, China, North Korea, or Iran. You know, those are threats that I think Democrats should be very supportive of defending against, because they're existential. And, you know, in terms of the environment, I mean, the environment would be devastated by either one of those catastrophes.
Yes, it sure would. That would be the ultimate catastrophe, I think.
For sure.
What are the steps or the recommendations that the task force is making that these people, whoever wins, should put into place in order to start building towards that resiliency, besides the simplest one, which is just sue for peace whenever possible?
Great question. So back in 2020, in December of 2020, the task force led by Peter Fry, wrote a series of recommendations to the Biden transition team. So, demonstrating again that we're nonpartisan. And we had perhaps 20 recommendations, and I would say chief among those recommendations was the declaration of a presidential emergency to refocus, to bypass Congress entirely and refocus funding to the EMP hardening, emergency against both, nuclear missile and super EMP attack. Mm-hmm. And, President Trump, we were very supportive of his decision to issue an executive order in 2019 directing, the national security apparatus to plan and prepare against the super EMP contingencies, both man-made attack as well as a naturally occurring super geomagnetic storm. But the one problem, the one thing that he didn't have the authority to do without the declaration of a presidential emergency was to authorize the funding necessary to harden the grid itself. And so that's really been, our great shortcoming or failure as a country is that, despite multiple efforts, including the Grid Act, which was passed unanimously by the House when it was still Democrat controlled, that was killed in the Senate, and then the SHIELD Act didn't even get out of committee. I think the House Energy Committee. We did pass the SEPA bill, which created an organization that's really focused on protecting the grid from from cyber attack and just from kind of normal storms. But in terms of defending against EMP, there's been almost nothing done in our country. And that's just inexcusable. It's a dereliction of duty. We believe it's a dereliction of duty as the task force that, members of Congress and the President of the United States have done, with the exception of President Trump, have never really lifted a finger to do anything to protect Americans against this threat, especially given the fact that we estimate up to 255 million Americans could perish within a year in the event of an EMP attack or a severe super geomagnetic storm from the sun.
Yeah, that's catastrophic levels, that's for sure. Our nation would not be America at that point. We'd be so susceptible to being run over by any gang of misfits who wanted to come and seize power, because when you lose 80-90% of your population in a short period of time, that creates a huge void.
That's exactly right. And that's something, it's a point I've been trying to drive home, is that, if we get attacked by EMP, in terms of a comprehensive nationwide EMP first strike, our military is going to melt away, and then we'll be defenseless against follow-on attacks, including invasion by multiple foreign powers. So if we want to, this is a matter of national survival that we're discussing here today. And that's why I'm so grateful that you had me on, so we can pass on this important message to your listeners to try to alert them as well as their families and motivate them to contact their congressional representatives to take immediate action.
Yes, we highly recommend that as well from our point of view from the Civil Defense Radio. You said that you guys submitted some paperwork to the Biden administration as recommendations. Have you put together any new recommendations or updated recommendations for whoever wins this competition in November?
We have not, and that's an excellent idea that we should follow up on. Building off of what we sent to the Biden transition team, we could send those recommendations to both campaigns, with our updated ideas that hopefully they could implement.
Yes, that would be awesome, especially if we find a way to get it out into the media that the task force has offered these list of guidance that may put pressure on people.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
That's unfortunately, that's the only way we can get things done is pressure people and shame them into compliance. You know, our adversaries, the Russians and Chinese, and even the North Koreans, they have elaborate bunker systems for their people. And here, because of the idiocy of past Congresses, we have this thing called mutually assured destruction. Well, that mad mutually assured destruction was only designed to destroy us, because we don't have what our adversaries have, which is a bunker system that protects the population. And that's one of the reasons why I started this movement to let people know about civil defense and what is needed in preparation, you know, along with Michael Mabee and his book, and Jonathan Hollerman and his books, and many others. And then I teamed up with the task force and others, and this is just something that is inexcusable. And we know, because I had a golden card, so to speak, that allowed me entrance into a bunker in case something happened. My wife didn't have that card, and I wasn't necessarily instructed that I was able to take her with me, but it caused me to start looking around, and that's how I came up with, you know, civil defense and why we need to bring it back. And that's why, one reason why I started this radio podcast. We as a nation have a lot of things that need to be fixed. And I think the power grid is essential to every aspect of life. And if we can't ensure that, then we can't ensure anything in our nation. Would you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, I've been saying that from that Psalm for many years now, highlighting exactly what you said, that, you know, mutually assured destruction is a Western theory. It's never been accepted by, Russia or China. Russia in particular has believed they could fight and win a nuclear war since the 1960s. And they, in terms of the best side that prepares for it, you know, could actually win. And they've put their money where their mouth is with, as you said, a massive, bunker system. They can protect 60 million of their citizens in the subway system that's deep underground. In terms of blast shelters, they have leadership protection bunkers, nuclear command centers that, 60,000 of the top Russian leaders and their families can survive in, Yamantau Mountain, and another similarly sized facility that each of which are the size of the underground or the DC Beltway. And those are buried 3,000 feet underneath granite, so they're likely survivable from our largest nuclear warhead in terms of a direct hit. China has their own nuclear command center northwest of Beijing that's 2,500 feet underground that also is likely survivable from a direct nuclear hit. So we have nothing comparable. You know, the White House would like, you know, there's an underground command center, but it's I don't know exactly how deep it is, but I can most assuredly, I think it's not deep enough to withstand, 500 kiloton warhead. So, if our enemies wanted to take out the president and all three nuclear footballs, they could do so if we were at DEFCON 4 or 5. And then we wouldn't be able to retaliate for several days until the acting president was able to get new nuclear codes with the loss of those nuclear footballs. So, there's just a myriad of threats. The American people aren't protected. You know, we gave that up with the ABM treaty. We decided to take down all of our civil defense networks. We had 4,000 anti-air missiles, surface-to-air missiles that we disarmed. After 1972, we had 4,000 fighter interceptors. We got rid of most of those. And we had, you know, we had a ballistic missile system that was in place, you know, in 1975, the safeguard system that was probably the most advanced in the world. And Congress ordered it dismantled the very year it became operational. SDI, of course, as depicted in the Reagan movie, that was never built. We don't have any space-based missile defense system. We have merely 44 ground-based interceptors, the GBI system. Whereas Russia likely has 10,000. So they have about 225 times more than we do. China likely has thousands of ABM interceptors as well that are Russian designed. They have a joint missile defense system. You know, we have nothing comparable. So, you know, we do have the Aegis missiles, SM, three and SM-6, but those have to be positioned right off the coast of the launch sites. And in the case of Russia and China, the launch sites are far from shore, so they likely would not be able to shoot down incoming ballistic missiles in their boost bays.
Right.
So, you know, we're way behind the power curve from our enemies, Russia and China in particular. As you alluded to, Russia, China, and North Korea, and likely Iran all have super EMP satellites or orbital nukes that could be detonated over the U.S. at an altitude of about 285 miles to take out our entire power grid and blanket the U.S. with EMP. So, you know, that's something we need to keep in mind and you know, defend the American people against.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great minds associated with the task force and so these other nonprofits that are out there working on the in the same direction that we are. I know there's been a lot of effort to try and coalesce actions, you know, towards our political establishment to make things better. But it seems like the ones who want to keep us the way we are have more money and influence than we do.
Yeah, that's true. You know, there's kind of like this uniparty consensus between, you know, Democrats and establishment Republicans, where they just want to continue this this failed foreign policy of liberal hegemony and kind of poke Russia in the eye and irritate China as well and provoke them to ally together more closely and conduct existential attacks against the U.S. homeland. And it's you know, it's presented as a policy of peace through strength, and in fact, it's a policy of war through weakness.
Yeah.
So it's creating the very threats that we're supposedly trying to defend against. And you know, honestly, we should be, with a foreign policy like this, we should be spending 7% of our GDP trying to defend against the threats that we're creating. We're provoking. Whereas with a policy of a true policy of peace through strength, where we prioritize peaceful negotiation instead of military confrontation, you know, we could do reasonably well in defending the U.S. with our current military, you know, defense funding.
Yeah, I agree. Like what's going on with the Ukraine, this is just madness as far as I'm concerned. If Russia was over here pushing Mexico to arm up against us, we'd be pissed. You know, when we got hit on September 11th by these planes running into the towers, we went to war and we spared no expense to bring retribution. But for some reason, Israel's not allowed to do the same thing when they get hit. And you know, 1,200 of their people dying, and hundreds are taken captive, and then murdered before they can be rescued. The mentality of certain Americans is convoluted. I don't understand where our nation has gone mentally in order to accept some of the stuff that they're accepting. It's just mind-boggling what we're facing in our nation. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and it all started with World War II, where we were kind of propagandized into believing that, U.S. global hegemony was a good thing in terms of being the policeman of the world. And, you know, and certainly we did a great job defending our allies against the Soviet threat. It's a question up for debate whether we needed to maintain 380,000 troops in Europe to defend Europe against the Soviet attack. But certainly, that made sense to some extent. But in terms of the policy we've had since then, which is essentially to disarm our country of 92% of its nuclear weapons, perhaps, you know, nearly, you know, 50% rather of our military in the face of provoking greater threats by expanding NATO, you know, again, as you mentioned, just provoking Russia to invade Ukraine unnecessarily when really all that President Putin was asking for was a written guarantee from President Biden that the U.S. would never allow Ukraine to join NATO. It's actually something, according to the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, it's the U.S. and Germany that are adamant that Ukraine will never join NATO behind the scenes. And yet, that's something that we refuse to admit to Russia that could, go a long way to ending the war that threatens to escalate to, a nuclear conflict.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It does fall into the 16-year plan that was hatched with Obama and Hillary. Right now, we're in Hillary's second term, and we're right along with that plan where we're on the verge of war with Russia. And it's amazing that these people in the deep state, the blob, whatever you want to call it, they're the ones that are actually pulling the strings and pushing our nation into this world war. I think that's exactly where we're headed, is a world war. If especially if one side wins in November over the one that's talking about peace.
Yeah, President Trump has done a great job in warning of that possibility that we really do face the greatest risk of World War III that we faced at least since the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that's something, that's not a partisan thing. President Biden himself has confirmed the same thing when he stated on, I think it was October 7th of 2022, that we did face the greatest threat of nuclear war since 1962. And that was as a result of the U.S.-backed Ukrainian offensive in the Kharkiv and Kherson regions that were, successful, that were, according to U.S. intelligence, they were, there was a 50% chance that Russia would use non-strategic nuclear weapons against Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So, that, of course, if we were to respond in kind or even conduct direct conventional attacks against Russian forces, that really could have provoked a nuclear, full-scale nuclear exchange that would have destroyed the United States. So, there's just no reason for us to be fighting, war in Ukraine, a proxy war with Russia and Ukraine. With a country that's outside of NATO, we have no security or no military alliance commitments with Ukrainians. It's at the farthest fringes of Eastern Europe, and the war's really being fought. It's not being fought for Ukraine's existence. It's being fought over Ukraine's political alignments, whether it will be a NATO country or a U.S. aligned militarily mm-hmm. aligned country, or a neutral country, as the Russians have been insisting since before they invaded.
Yeah. Well, some people think that the 16-year plan is a bunch of BS, but General Flynn has spoke about it recently on a podcast, so I just want to get that out there. So it's validated by somebody who knows. So, David, I was wondering, can you give us the way that our friends out there that are listening can can follow you and your work, because you produce a very, very good Substack, and you also have articles that show up in different periodicals. So can you give us some ideas of where to find that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can, your listeners can find me at the Real War newsletter, which is at dpyne.substack.com. Once again, dpyne.substack.com. And there I provide about 3 to 5, probably once a week is how frequently I publish national security updates on various subjects, mostly on what we discussed today. Both in terms of, you know, national security strategy, you know, EMP defense, and also, you know, foreign policy, the war in Ukraine and the coming war in Taiwan, and how to, and, you know, I think the thing that distinguishes me from a lot of my peers, national security experts and writers, is that I provide, you know, more lengthy and in-depth articles, not just like kind of like the 700-word op-eds that really have substance to them, and most importantly, have real-world solutions, you know, that U.S. policymakers can implement that could kind of, you know, greatly reduce and even end the existential threats we're facing today that, you know, threaten to end our country.
Yeah, that's great. What we'll do is we'll post the links to these different publications in the show notes. But again, you can always find the task force at emptaskforce.us. It's .us. It's not anything else. It's .us. And so there's a lot of great information there. There's some books by Jonathan Hollerman and Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, which there's a new book coming out here soon that you're working on. You and Cynthia are working on, and that it's the as I understand it, the last work that Dr. Pry had begun.
Yeah, that's correct. So he had two books that he wanted us to publish, and the first one we published early last year, and that was Catastrophe Now, the existential threat of EMP. Or rather, America's Last Chance to prevent an EMP disaster. And then our new book, which originally was going to come out later this month, and now it's due out at the end of the year in December, is going to focus on kind of an alternate nuclear posture review, you know, in terms of, again, what we can do to protect and defend America against existential threats, you know, principally nuclear and also super EMP attack.
Great. Great. Well, thank you. So that'll have to be the last word. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency managers and emergent community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, and also X. It's at, I had to change the X moniker there, so it's @@Defense Radio. That's where you can find it. I've posted a few things there recently. Most of the items that we post are important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. However, when I find something funny, I may post that as well. So please consider the information and use it wisely. I wish to thank our guest, David Pine, again for his coming on the show, and our American and international friends who listen to us regularly. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time. Goodbye.